Two officers were shot, one man lost a pinky.
But didn't nobody die?
You destroyed half a city block!
That block was already messed up!
And you lost a lot of evidence!
We still got a little bit left!
Hiroshima.
Hello, Jellyheads, and welcome to another exciting episode of Know Your Tunes at the Drive-In. We are your hosts, David Halstead and...
Some guy named Luke.
He's here, at least. And this is a show where we discuss the strange... Yes? Oh, my God. And who is with us today?
Matt Buckley. None other than...
Matt Buckley!
Your old friend.
Psycho Jellyfish alum, Matt Buckley. You know,
what's up, guys?
I would love to do, like, a reunion. Say if Last Coin, like, took off, you know, and we actually had a Last Coin Fest. You haven't been listening, but we've had this running joke in the afterwards about Last Coin Fest.
Oh, okay.
There's still a chance of getting Rage Against the Machine.
Yes, yes, yes. Gravedigger's going to be there.
So you're, like, musing about this... this festival that's going to come to fruition eventually.
Recently, what was it? Lucas said something about, hey, Mozart can't make it, due to being dead for 300 years, but, it was a sad realization.
The Beatles reunion is sadly canceled.
No, we're reanimating them.
They could be holograms.
True, true. But,
with the real Paul McCartney.
What I was going to say was that if we did like a Last Coin Fest, it'd be nice if like, you know, there was that panel in like the middle of the festival where you talk to like all the hosts that ever hosted Last Coin. So we could get everybody together.
I'm in.
It's up to you, audience.
Last Coin Fest 2000.
Well, it's easy to say that now, Matt. This is a pipe dream.
Well, it's glad to have you back, Matt. You haven't been on Last Coin.
It's good to be back. I missed my voice being... on the interwebs.
So do I, yeah. Hearing it through these headphones is a nice nostalgic
bring
kick.
You back?
Yeah.
To a simpler time?
Yeah.
To a time when he had a house.
Oh, when I had a house? Yeah.
And you had your own house.
Yeah.
And you had just a little studio in there.
I did. So, Matt, how did you watch this again?
So, I kind of accidentally slept in this morning / afternoon, and by the time I got going and stuff, there were some things that I needed to take care of in Albany before I met up with you. There wasn't time for me to watch the movie at home before I left as I originally planned. So I met up with some people that I used to work with on their lunch break, and then afterward I drove to, well, first I tried Mocha Lisa's, and then I tried a couple different like cafes.
What do you mean tried?
I was trying to use their Wi-Fi to watch. to watch the movie on my Surface, because I brought my Surface along. It's got a nice 10-inch screen. But the problem was, I wasn't getting a strong enough signal outside of those buildings, and I already drank coffee, so I didn't want to go in and...
You could have had, like, a pastry.
I didn't want to eat a pastry. So essentially what this...
tea.
I could have, but I had just drank a bunch of things. So it came down to me having to stream the movie on my phone, watching it in my car, this crappy bootleg version on YouTube that it was like the outer borders like got cut out. So I couldn't see like any subtitles like for the parts where they spoke Mandarin, and like a lot of stuff on the outer side of like the screen I couldn't see. It's pretty bad. But I think I saw enough of the movie to where I can speak to it.
So you don't own this on Blu-ray, Matt?
No. I don't really own a lot of DVDs and stuff.
Ah, you're one of those people.
Like, I do have DVDs, but it's for like movies I watched when I was in like high school and college. Anything like after that, I don't have any DVDs or physical media for it.
I still get Blu-rays of like movies I'm really into, because streaming, you're still not going to get full 1080.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily care so much about that.
Hey, man. Well, I'm a cinephile.
I know you are, Lucas.
Yeah, I've gotten myself into collecting like special edition DVDs and stuff.
That's usually how I go. It's like, I want to know
Blu-rays,
how this is made.
And mostly Blu-rays.
That is really cool. The only thing I really buy, like, DVD-wise anymore is occasionally I'll get, like, if it's a box set of something really cool that I like a TV series, anime series, something like that.
Yeah. You see, it's TV series that I have a hard time justifying buying because I watch so much on Netflix. But movies, I'm like, here's a good quality movie that I want to be able to hold on to, watch whenever I want, and share with people.
Yeah. Criterion, man.
Right, but TV shows are always taken off
the new
of Netflix,
Criterion
too.
TCM streaming, I might cut out a significant chunk of my Blu-ray collecting. And honest to God, I've been watching most movies from the library these days. They have a way better selection than Netflix and Amazon does.
And it's free.
Hulu and actually completely has a free Criterion collection too. Tom, our web guy, was showing me at his place this past weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't been a subscriber of Hulu in maybe 2 or 3 years, but I remember their movie selection wasn't very impressive when I was a member.
Well, this is the longest.
And they're about to lose their Criterion
Hulu?
Movies. Yeah, Hulu had a deal with Criterion.
And oh.
They're about to lose that now because Criterion and Turner Classic Movies are developing their own streaming service that's about like having high-quality classic movies.
That's
so
really
it's like
cool.
A streaming service for cinephiles.
Mm.
And they're also including streaming the special features.
That's the important part.
When is that going to be available?
Not soon enough. So anyway,
what's going on?
This is the show where we discuss the strange, the obscure, the B, the cult, the classic, and sometimes just plain old bad movies that have across the camera lens. And tonight, we are returning to one of our favorite performers, Jackie Chan, in his breakout American role in what movie?
Rush Hour!
If you want the girl back alive, listen and do not talk. The drop will be made tonight, 11 p.m.
The amount will be $50
million. $50
million?
And who do you think you kidnapped, Chelsea Clinton?
Detective James Carter loved his job just a little too much.
You destroyed half a city block.
That block was already messed up.
And you lost a lot of evidence.
Still got a little bit left.
But the job got a little too dangerous.
You have 29 minutes left.
I got everything under control.
Papa! I want to speak with my daughter.
Han was about to get his daughter back and you screwed it up.
I would like one of my people to help.
Now it's time to bring in the master.
Please tell me you speak English. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
I don't want no partner, I don't need no partner, and I ain't gonna never have no partner. Did Kojak have a partner?
Yeah, the fat guy.
Did Columbo have a partner?
No. You put your own bag in the back. I'm not a sky cat.
Beach Boys.
Oh, hell no. Don't you ever touch a black man's radio, boy. Yeah.
They're two cops with nothing in common.
Do it again. Like this?
Except the case.
Hello.
You have one more chance.
They can't walk away from.
Agent Carter is very passionate about finding your daughter.
Damn!
Get up.
Go up with your hands up if you got the feeling. Jump up past the ceiling. Jump around. Jump around.
Which one of y'all kicked me?
From New Line Cinema. The fastest hands in the East.
Wow.
Meet the biggest mouth in the West.
Just received a threat on the building. We ask you, please exit the building. Do not panic. Do you hear what I just said? Get the hell out of here. There's a bomb in the building.
Jackie Chan.
I can't hold it anymore.
Just hang on, man. I'll be right back.
Chris Tucker.
FBI, take a picture. It's okay. Wait a minute.
Rush Hour.
We can hang my crib. I will show you my hood.
What the hell did you just say?
The second best Jackie Chan movie to be reviewed on this show.
Yes, that's true.
I remember the first one you recommended.
Which I've heard people say that's good, but I guess only if you can get a dubbed version.
Yeah.
Because the dubbing just is so horrendously bad.
Oh, you mean a subtitled version.
Oh, yes.
Because we watched the dub version, and the dub was just so bad.
Sorry, audience.
All the jokes fell flat.
For shame. Sorry, I steered you guys wrong that time.
I don't think we finished it.
At least no, we didn't. And apparently the ending is sort of like the only time there's like a really exciting fight scene, so we missed probably the only good part of the film.
This movie
we couldn't stand it. We couldn't do it.
This movie was a bit more palatable, right?
Not as action-packed as Rumble in the Bronx. More.
Yeah, like the Hong Kong movies are like so much action packed into those things.
But there was a lot of screaming and yelling.
A lot of good stuff.
Definitely a lot of good stuff. I did a little write-up here. Rush Hour is a 1998 action comedy directed by Brett Ratner and starring Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. Chan is a Hong Kong detective and bodyguard to a Chinese diplomat. Tucker is a rowdy LA cop with a big mouth and a big ego who always works alone. When the Chinese diplomat's daughter gets kidnapped by a shadowy organization, Chan travels to LA to pick up the case, but the FBI don't want an outsider with a personal connection to the family interfering, so they attach Tucker as a would-be babysitter to keep Chan out of the way. All this is simply to get Chan and Tucker together for some East meets West antics and plenty of action thrown their way. Chan and Tucker actually have great chemistry on screen, and through all the typical plot contrivances and bad dialogue, managed to shine as an engaging comic team. As this was Chan's first English-speaking Hollywood film, it works in his favor that Tucker's loudmouth persona handles most of the dialogue, and his dialogue plays into his fish-out-of-water situation with admirable charm. Chan's fluid stunt work speaks for itself, translating incredibly well from Hong Kong filmmaking to American filmmaking and showing that he's just as entertaining no matter what side of the world he's on. This is a fun, highly enjoyable film which, while it shows its seams here and there, still holds together today.
In Rumble in the Bronx, Dave.
Yes.
He spoke Chinese in that.
Right.
But then did he do the English dub? Because it sounded like Jackie Chan. Did it not?
But on the set, he wasn't speaking English.
But I'm wondering, did he...
It was dubbed in later.
Yeah, did he dub in English? Did he, Matt?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I have tried... It's very hard to find who dubs people. It's like nearly impossible.
Yeah, they're not listed.
It doesn't show up in the credits?
No.
No. It never. They're like, go on to IMDb. You cannot find dub artists in the credits. Because it sounds like the same voice, I'm tempted to say that he was able to at least stand in front of a microphone and read the lines in English after the fact. But
I get the feeling that it's like in dubbing in general, it's like the same people get the same work. Because it's like I'll hear, you know, English dubs or something. It's like that sounds like, especially the older ones for like Italian and Japanese movies. It's like that sounds familiar. And then,
oh yeah, lots of the same people doing the dubbing.
And then when I watch German dubs of English spoken movies, it sounds like the same like two people.
There aren't a lot of people out there doing it.
Yeah, I think it's probably not like a easy biz to get into.
Well, it's not very glamorous. You don't get credited for it, apparently.
You know what's a hard biz to get into? Voice work in movies for background actors. So, like, people come in and do, like, the voices and sounds of people, like, in the background going, like, hey.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of people see that as a stepping stone into getting into, like, as an acting role, and like, voice acting and stuff. So, like, they guard their slot hard, and they don't like letting new people in.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess there's... like more of a process to coming up with that than we would like would initially think.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
The little girl had to been dubbed because I remember her mouth moved and it didn't match the words.
Isn't there like a big company that's responsible for dubbing most anime?
Funimation.
Funimation.
Funimation does
Funimation.
A lot of them.
Yeah, they brought a lot of anime over. There's like a U.S. company that bought them the rights to.
They're definitely the biggest. They have the most resources.
Yeah, they did DBZ.
Well, I remember that, like, old kaiju films, the dubbing was actually really fun and good. And sometimes you would see an American in the background or, like, in a scene somewhere, and that would be the person who was doing the dub.
Nice.
The original Godzilla, when they brought it over to America and they dubbed the actors, they literally got like a male and a female actor. I believe they were both Japanese, but could speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And they sat them in a room and had them read the dialogue into a microphone, you know, a recording device. And there was no, like, showing them the film. They had no idea what any of this was about. They just read the lines in front of them, and they worked it out in editing later.
Explains the emotions not matching the action sometimes.
So I have a question for you guys.
Voss.
Was you having me choose this movie part of, like, a theme month or theme period like it has been in the past?
Was it? Or
not really.
I think we just wanted you on for Rumble in the Bronx, but you weren't going to be available to do it, so we're like, pick another Jackie Chan movie.
But are you doing, like, Jackie Chan month or something?
No.
I forgot what brought us there. Why did we watch Rumble in the Bronx?
Because it showed up on Netflix, and I
oh yeah, you have a childhood
as a kid and wanted to just to cover it.
Rumble in Bronx, Vancouver.
So, what did you guys think of this movie?
Well, like I said in my write-up, this is a highly enjoyable movie despite being a little dated.
I think it holds up pretty well.
I was surprised. When it started, especially like when Chris Tucker's character shoots a car that has a trunk full of C4 and it blows up in the street and then he does a dance. I was just like, I watched this as a kid, but is this going to hold up? Or am I just going to be sitting here cringing a lot? And there was some really cheesy dialogue, especially with the police chief, where I'm just like, oh my God, just can we skip this? But overall, loved it.
Yeah, definitely.
The first one had critical praise for it, but then the sequels were bashed by critics for Chris Tucker being too loud and talking too much.
Isn't that the whole point to his character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what he did in the first movie.
Oh, maybe.
Which makes no, like, what did you?
I guess it just got old after the first movie. Like, people got tired of it, maybe.
I can't remember the other. I never saw three.
I actually saw three in theaters.
But 2007, right?
Yeah, but it was such a forgettable movie that I don't really remember too much about it. Just that it was.
It's too bad.
It's just it was kind of a retread, I guess.
Didn't you say there Chris Tucker is trying to get a fourth one going?
There's a rumored Rush Hour 4 in the works. I have my doubts that it will happen.
That could be a very interesting movie, though.
If Chan's starting to get along in the tooth, how long can he do these stunts?
Yeah, is it going to be like Indy 4?
Well, he doesn't have to do all of his own stunts anymore.
I guess you could have a stuntman,
but that kind of takes away from the thrill of, you know, an action movie with Jackie Chan. Like, he's doing stuff.
You can't expect him to, like, jump off of buildings and stuff when he's 70 years old, practically.
Harrison Ford did.
I'm sure he had a lot of help.
Lucas, you saw The Force Awakens, right?
No,
you saw Harrison Ford limp his way through that entire movie?
No, I'm not talking about that. I actually remember reading he did. I think he insisted on doing all of his own stunts in Indy 4.
And weren't we all so impressed with that?
It's been a while since I've seen
And he ended up, didn't he end up getting hurt or something? Like breaking his leg?
Oh yeah, like the first week of shooting, the door to the Millennium Falcon fell on his leg. And, so he was out of commission for weeks while, Abrams figured out how to rearrange the schedule. But I guess it like,
he said. The door to the Millennium Falcon fell on his leg?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. But
it turned out to be sort of fate in a way, because it worked out in the sense that it gave more screen time to Rey and Finn's character interacting.
Yeah, he said he wasn't happy with the performance. Like, they were having like a really confrontational relationship. And then when the thing with Ford happened, it gave him time to think about it and be like, you know what? I'm going to make these two best buddies. And that worked out.
Yeah, because I don't think you could have embraced these characters if they were at odds with each other, even though the characters in the original were at odds with each other.
True. At least in the first movie. Yeah.
But we really needed to embrace these new characters and embrace that they had a friendship and connection.
Yeah, I think it worked.
If only Jackie Chan were in it.
And Chris Tucker?
Yeah, and Chris Tucker.
How strange would that be?
Chris Tucker reprising his character from The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah. some of us forget that was him.
It's one of the most incredibly obnoxious characters in all of film history.
Donnie Yen from
Ip Man. Donnie Yen from Ip Man, is going to be in
Rogue One.
Oh.
So there's a little martial arts action happening in Star Wars.
He's blind and he beats up stormtroopers with a stick. It's going to rock.
Is he blind?
Yes, his character is blind. You didn't catch that?
I did not.
That's interesting.
It's a walking stick that he uses to beat him up with.
Oh.
He's going to be Star Wars Daredevil, man. that movie looks so, just the scale of everything is so great. It's like, yes, this is why Edwards is doing this movie, because he gets the scale right.
A lot of people are really hyped for it.
Are you hyped for it, Matt?
Of course I am.
Did you see Force Awakens?
Yes, I did.
Did you pee your pants?
Almost.
Oh, okay. Cool. Cool. I'll accept that.
Did you pee your pants, Lucas?
Oh, like the seat? They had to replace it.
They had to close
the
down that particular
time,
theater for a while.
The next time I was sitting next to you.
No, that time. That old man probably did.
I just want to watch Star Wars.
I've never had to move around so much in a theater as I did that day.
Yeah, it was like a month after it came out. It was still...
Yeah, I saw it a while after it came out, too.
It was so packed. You're like, oh, excuse me, move. Oh, okay, I'll move over here so you guys can sit together. Okay.
Yeah, we sat in this spot, and these two old people were sitting next to us. And then you know how the previews are like 15 minutes long?
Yeah.
And they're all like terrible trailers, too. And this old guy...
Hey. Hardcore Henry looks pretty awesome.
I didn't see that in our...
That wasn't playing when
we went.
We went.
But this old guy's sitting there, and you just hear him going, I just want to watch Star Wars.
Wow, that's actually really funny.
Like, I wanted to high-five that guy. I kind of like you.
I just want to watch Star Wars.
Can I take you home?
We can watch Star Wars at home together.
New grandpa.
What does Grandpa Lucas think of that?
Any old man that likes what I do, he's an all right fellow in my book.
But Lucas is talking about replacing you, Grandpa Lucas.
What? He can't do that. I'm the only one. Well,
do you like Star Wars?
Why not?
That didn't sound very convincing.
Sure.
The kids
quote
like it.
Star Wars.
The kids like it, so I gotta like it.
Say a line from one of the movies.
I love you.
I'm sorry, Grandpa Lucas. You're getting replaced.
No!
Market research shows that new grandpa is far more popular.
We conducted some studies with some focus groups.
But I've been here for 4 years.
It's
time for a change.
Old. We kind of want to move on to the guy whose catchphrase is, I just want to watch Star Wars.
I can do it too. I want to watch Star Trek. Damn it.
You see, your time is just over, man. I'm sorry.
My time's just beginning.
I'm going to put you out to pasture.
I like cows.
That's good. Go with that.
It was a figure of speech, Grandpa Lucas.
Jackie Chan.
So,
yes,
Matt,
Rush Hour.
Matt, why did you recommend Rush Hour?
Well, you told me to pick a Jackie Chan movie.
Okay.
And I thought that you guys were planning on me picking a more martial arts-oriented Jackie Chan movie.
Okay.
So I wanted to throw you guys off.
You wanted to throw us off?
Yes.
And send us into an Americanized Jackie Chan movie.
Yes, with not a lot of martial arts in it.
I mean, there are a few good scenes that really feel like classic Jackie Chan scenes.
Oh, most definitely.
Especially at the end.
I actually think the best fight scene is in the pool room.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty cool.
Pool room.
Billiards. The bar.
I don't remember billiards being a... Oh, that. Oh, jeez. I was thinking
when Jackie Chan pisses some people
for
off.
For some reason, I'm like thinking about like the Chinese food restaurant, and I'm like, where were their billiards? Yeah.
And you got those scenes with that great, like in the Chinese restaurant when they go in the back room and they have that showdown. You know, there's Jackie Chan trying to get a gun away from a guy, and it's got that great classic Jackie Chan rhythm where it's like, whoa, yeah, whoa, whoa, yeah, whoa, whoa. Mm-hmm.
Punch that guy, then this guy, then this guy, then stab that guy, then poke out this guy's eyes.
No, like they're both on the ground trying to get the gun, and it's like wherever the guy's reaching for, Jackie Chan like moves the gun or hits the guy's hand or something, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the timing of it. It's like, whoop, whoop, whoop. Like there's a sound and emotion, and it's whoop, 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 whoop.
So this was in 1998.
Yeah.
And Jackie Chan's prime, what would we say that would be in like the early to mid 90s in terms of like.
Oh, yeah. His early 90s work was probably the best. With Rumble in the Bronx and Legend of the Drunken Master being big highlights, and also like the Super Cop films.
Oh yeah,
Super Cop films.
Yeah, there's like a whole series of Super Cop films that he did from the 80s to the 90s.
Was he a super cop?
Yes, that was the general premise, and that's pretty much all you need to know.
What did he do?
He did super cop things.
Well, he was also a cop in this. Is it just a continuation of Super Cop?
Kind of, just like playing that same type of character. There wasn't a lot of variation in the type of characters he was playing at this point, I guess.
Okay. Did American audiences like Jackie Chan before Rumble in the Bronx?
They might not have even known who he was, did they?
I mean, well, video stores really were responsible for people getting import movies and sort of cult followings around import movies, particularly Hong Kong and martial arts films. So in the early 90s, and you get the video, late 80s, early 90s, you get the video stores with the back shelf of imports, and Jackie Chan was definitely one of the stars that people saw. Okay, here's a Jackie Chan one. That's one to watch.
Okay.
So there was a lot of name recognition with him.
But that was more of an underground thing. He didn't really come to popular knowledge until movies like Rumble in the Bronx. And then I believe Legend of the Drunken Master was released theatrically in America.
Well, I think
it was a Hong Kong movie.
I think Rush Hour obviously is what made him a household name.
Absolutely. This was an incredibly successful film.
I don't know. I think it's Jackie Chan Adventures.
Well, oh, man. That was such a good cartoon series from my childhood.
Uncle.
Except the cartoon representation of Jackie Chan in that didn't really look like Jackie Chan.
No, it didn't.
I'm remembering the intro now. It would, like, splice between Jackie Chan and the cartoon. Him doing kung fu.
Well, to elaborate on the point we were discussing, the whole point of Rumble in the Bronx, it having an American setting, was to get Jackie Chan more exposure in America. Hi, guys.
I heard that whole thing.
More exposure in America.
Yes. Jackie Chan, Rumble in the Bronx, gave him more exposure in America.
So he could
have a career.
Yeah, you're just fooling around.
In the United States.
America.
Well, talking about Rush Hour specifically.
Yes.
I think this movie worked really well as a buddy cop movie because of just how different Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker's characters were. Like the contrast and the chemistry.
They are different, but I would say that they are both very physical. And that's part of what makes it them work is a team.
What's your rebuttal of that, Matt?
Oh, I agree, but I think
different personalities,
the nature of their physicality is very
skill.
Different. Like Jackie Chan, his character Lee is much more like fluid and graceful, and Tucker's character is just—he's all over the place, very erratic,
tripping over himself.
But yeah, you're right; they are both very physical.
But you are right in the sense that they're physical in different ways, you know.
And that's part of what makes it a great movie is you have these two contrasting styles that are both working against and with each other.
And I almost wanted to just throw on the sequels, regardless of whatever quality they were, because they work so well together. I just want to see more of them.
Are you sure
I
about
think
that?
You could totally do a film with them now. You know, and they're older. They don't do so much of the, you know, karate and, you know, physical action stuff.
What's this less physical rush hour 4 going on in your head?
Sounds like Rush Hour bore to me.
Not necessarily a Rush Hour film, but just a film with them. And obviously you would play it differently. Maybe not have it be an action film. Maybe have it be just some other form of, you know, like comedy and some other genre mixed in.
I don't know if you guys would agree with this or not, but I think that if this same exact movie was released today, I think people would be angry because there's a lot of stereotyping in this movie.
Oh, completely. Like
I don't know if this
movie is not politically correct at all.
Because you have the black character who's like this, he's kind of flamboyant, he like dances and he just
has... There's a reason Chris Tucker is not a big personality anymore. Like a star, because that we lost our taste for that kind of comedy.
Exactly. Like, it's funny watching it now and looking back at it, but like,
it was one of the reasons I was starting to cringe at the beginning. It was like, oh God, what is this? Is this going to be? But I forgave it for being a product of its time. I think you're right. I would not forgive it now if it was released today and it had these attitudes. But being a product of the late 90s, I was able to say, and especially because I enjoyed it as a kid, I was able to forgive it, basically, and just almost say it's like, okay, what it's doing is kind of wrong, but they're kind of ignorant of that fact.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, how do you think Chris Tucker would act now, if given the opportunity?
I don't know. The last thing he was in was Silver Linings Playbook. I don't know what he's like now, if his voice is different.
He looks different.
Have you seen him? No, I haven't.
He looks different.
He looks a little different. You know, just older guy, gained a little weight and stuff, you know.
When's the last time he had a lead role in a movie?
I think it was Rush Hour 3.
Because I haven't heard of Chris Tucker really being in anything the last, like, decade.
No, he was a really big star, like, in the 90s. And then after Rush Hour 3, he just couldn't get work.
Yeah, you're right.
And he actually is listed as a known celebrity who is currently broke. He got a lot of money in the 90s. And then when after Rush Hour 3, all the acting opportunities dried up and he went broke.
He did Playbook and then something called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which is in post-production currently. And then at Rush Hour 4 announced Carter Rumored.
Well, who's he going to play if there's a Rush Hour 4? Is he not going to play Carter?
There's definitely nobody else
he
can play.
The movie is rumored.
The way they have it on IMDb, his character is rumored.
And it's like, no, we're definitely making Rush Hour 4. Chris Tucker might be in it.
Popularity down 711. A movie that's not even out.
I would like to see a Rush Hour 4, but like I said, since the originals relied so much on, like, these stereotypes and tropes. Like,
cultural differences gags did great on me. But then there was things like him trying to sing War, and they start, like, just hating out. And that's, like, that's where it's, like, they have really incredible chemistry. And it's just, like, that's just a very enjoyable scene. And I think that speaks more to, like, somebody trying to learn a language and, like, oh, you're saying it wrong. It's like this.
Oh, like that scene in the credits.
There's a scene after the credits?
Well, while the credits are rolling, there's just bloopers, outtakes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is Jackie Chan not being able to speak English. But then they do Chris Tucker. He's got one line in Chinese.
Oh, Mandarin.
And
I think I did see that.
Do several takes, and Jackie Chan calls him on it. He's like, "I do this entire movie. You have one line in Chinese."
See, it's not so easy, is it?
Oh man,
I wonder if there's any Chinese speaking gags like that in the other two Rush Hours, Matt.
I don't remember.
Let me
Neither
down.
Do I, dude? I saw Rush Hour 2 at some point, but.
I
can't remember it.
I've only seen these movies in like parts, and it's usually like the same scene over and over again
that happens to you a lot with various movies where you'll catch them, but you'll always catch the same scene.
Yeah, this one, whenever it was on TV, I'd catch the ending where they're jumping around the artifacts and stuff and trying to save the girl. And it, which one's the one that they're in like a spa or something like that? Is that the second one or the third one?
Again, can't remember.
They're running around with like towels and stuff.
I don't remember that being in the third one. Naked. So
it's in the.
I think that does seem.
I think that's the second one.
I want to say that's in the second one.
That one was always on TV whenever I would be flipping through the channels.
Yeah, and that ending scene is so great. Like when he's trying not to break all these artifacts, he's trying to protect them from the guys who are beating him. And it's Chinese guys he's fighting, which makes me think that they're guys Jackie Chan brought over that he'd worked with before.
Probably.
It probably saved time to have the stunt people he was used to working with.
And he's got a team.
Because when he does do stunt work, it feels like, it almost feels like he directed those scenes. Like, they feel so much more like his Hong Kong films.
And like, even if somebody came in to try and direct him, he'd be like, no, you're doing this wrong. You're supposed to do it like this. And then they just throw their hands up, like, just let Jackie do it.
I think that's fair. I think this is why you have the guy.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of those minion roles were probably his stunt team, like the people he works with a lot.
It sure seems that way. And when he's trying to hold up the big, you know, jar, artifact.
Urn thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's a giant urn, vase, whatever, that's ancient. And they're like punching, and he's got to like hold that up and knock these two guys out. It's a great, very well choreographed scene. And the payoff is that after he's beaten up those two guys and he has it set up, he turns around and a bullet hits it and just shatters it. He's just like, shit!
Did you guys think that, like, the slapstick comedy in it was actually pretty funny?
The physical humor. Yeah,
like, at the end, there was actually a couple ones, but...
I mean, Dave, like, just said one at the end.
Well, another one at the end where Lee is hanging from, like, the ceiling or whatever. He's about to fall, and then... Chris Tucker's character grabs the flag to catch him, and then Lee falls and he's sliding down the flag, and then he reaches the bottom, and Chris Tucker's character's like, "Oh shit!" and then just gets leveled by Jackie Chan. I actually thought that was pretty
funny.
There's
that moment where of realization where it's like, "Oh, he's not gonna stop."
And he was like, "I wish you had been right polite to me. My nuts."
Whenever Chris Tucker was with Jackie Chan in this movie, I liked him. Whenever he was on his own, like in the beginning of the film, when he's on his own, it's like, I don't find him funny. I don't like it. But the second he was with Jackie Chan.
Well, what about that one conversation where he was saying like how, like there was still a little bit of evidence left and stuff like that when he was defending that one scene in the beginning of the film?
Yeah, that dialogue is terrible.
I thought that was pretty funny though.
But it does make me laugh. You know, it's like when he says that street was already messed up. It's like, yeah, and he's having a back and forth with the chief, but he doesn't necessarily have good chemistry with the chief. It's just that line, that street was already messed up, is just that works on paper.
Right. No, I agree with you.
I mean, he performed it well, but it wasn't like a great like if he had better chemistry with the chief, the actor playing the chief, I think it would totally work better, been funnier. But then they are trying to sell you ask yourself, what is the film trying to do? And it's trying to show you that this character is flawed. He's very obnoxious. And at the end, from his experience with working with Jackie Chan's character, he's going to have developed as a person. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going to be the same dirtbag he was at the beginning of the film.
Because at the beginning, he was saying how he never works with anybody. He made it seem like he doesn't trust anybody. And then
loyalty. Exactly. He wants to do things his own way. By the end, he finds someone he can trust. And also stops being so sexist to the one female officer.
I'm sorry, I spread rumors that we were sleeping together at Christmas.
Yeah, that's a joke that would not go well today. It's like that's just in bad taste. But I almost look back in time, and as long as they don't do something like outrageously egregious, I'm like, well, they legitimately thought that was funny. They were wrong, but it was a more innocent time, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like people would get really sensitive about that stuff now.
It's like, you know, sometimes I'll, you know, see like teenagers doing or saying things that are like off color, and I'm just kind of like, they'll learn or they won't, and the more likely we'll learn. You know, I was young once, they said incredibly foolish, said and did incredibly foolish things that I'm like, I learned as I got older, you know, it's like, oh, maybe that isn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's okay to see certain things on that level. So yeah, Lucas, I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about the quality of this film.
What do you mean by quality?
Like, how's the look of the film hold up to you and the cinematography?
I was trying to put a finger on that. I think there were some good shots utilizing the color of, like, the Chinese of Chinatown area. That's probably where it shined visually.
Yeah, I did notice the use of color.
Mm-hmm. That I think worked out in the Chinatown area of the film. But overall, I thought it was like, you know, generic comedy filming mm-hmm. style.
Yeah, Brett Ratner is a pretty generic film director, I would say. Not necessarily an untalented one, but just he's not doing anything exceptional to catch your eye.
Yeah, I thought the cinematography was competent. There was nothing too groundbreaking about any of that stuff. Nothing too artistic.
And there wasn't a lot of Jackie Chan fighting, so you didn't get the kind of shooting style that you get as often as you would with most of his movies.
It doesn't stand out as a point against the film
too much.
Other than just not being innovative, it's never like, oh, that was bad.
No, I've never watched this and going, like, that was an awful something or other. Like, because there's no, like, CG really effects or anything. It was just all
right. And stuff. Also, I would credit it for not being too quick cutty.
Oh, yeah. 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 It doesn't suffer from that. When the action happens, it sticks to keeping things mostly on screen or, you know, kind of indicating what's about to happen next. I don't know if it suffers from any of those things pointed out in that previous video.
No, it's like when you punch, when you saw the punch thrown and it hit the person, mm-hmm. and then like Jackie Chan would turn away to fight somebody else, and then it would cut. Like it showed the full action in one shot.
Yes,
very often.
Yes, yes. So you get those kind of cool fluid moments, like when he like took that chief's belt off and took his gun and stuff.
Oh yeah. That was one shot, you know, him like, yeah, and then he's got the gun on the guy.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that sort of, like, quick, like, gunplay.
Yes. Know, it's
like, Chris Tucker pulls a gun on Jackie Chan when they're getting out of a cab, you know, he's had to chase Jackie Chan down. And then Jackie Chan steals the gun, and then there's a moment of distraction with the cabbie, and Tucker has another gun that he draws on Chan, and then the cabbie pulls a gun on both of them, and they both put their arms up.
It was funny because they were both, like, so serious about their standoff, even though they had guns pointed at each other already, but then the cabbie pulls out a gun, and they both just drop it instantly.
And that's, of course, the scene where the first time you hear Jackie Chan speaking English on camera.
Yes.
In a movie.
Yes. I mean, even with the gunplay, there was like a whole training montage of bonding right. between.
And I gotta credit them for setting up things and paying them off. There's the whole thing of I work alone, and then you get more and more information about that. It has something to do with Chris Tucker's character's father getting killed and his partner not doing anything. And so that's why he doesn't trust a partner. And, you know, that thread is worked all the way through the film pretty well. And then there's, of course, the training montage, you know, you assume Chris Tucker was like, how the heck did you pull that gun out of my hand?
Yeah. And then they have like this kind of 5-minute, you know, hey, I'm going to show you how to do these moves. And they're like, yeah, that's cool. And they're hanging out. It's after they did their war hoo-ha.
Good God, y'all.
Part thing. Yeah. And then later on, Chris Tucker sneaking up on a dude in a van. The guy pulls a gun on him, and he steals the guy's gun.
Yep, totally pulls off that moment. Yeah. Also, back to the war scene. Jackie Chan singing war. I don't know who thought that up, but that should be like, I should have my palm, my face just in my hands going, oh my God, what were they thinking? And it's actually really charming.
It somehow worked.
Yeah. I'm like, if you presented this to me, like, at a pitch meeting on paper, I'd say, that, no, that's
like, what the
awful.
Hell are you thinking?
But then if you brought in Jackie Chan, try to sing war, and Jackie Chan was like, war. Good God, yeah, I'm like, that's in the movie. That's gotta be in the movie. The man is freaking adorable.
And Americans have been in love with Jackie Chan ever since.
Jackie! What is Jackie Chan doing up to lately?
The last thing I knew that he'd done was,
Was that weird the neighbor? Kung Fu
Karate Kid.
Oh!
He was the new Mr. Miyagi.
That's right. Was that before or after that movie where he played, like, this super spy neighbor?
Oh, I think that was after.
Pull up his IMDb.
Fine.
IMDb. He's doing voice work for, like, Kung Fu Panda. And now he's doing
Kung Fu Yoga?
English-speaking voice work. Guy could barely speak English in 1998. Now he's doing English voice work.
Kung Fu Yoga. That's his newest endeavor.
Dragon Blade was his last film. That's like a historical epic.
Oh.
Directed by Daniel Lee and co-starring John Cusack and Adrian Brody. Okay.
I've never even heard of that movie.
Neither did I. Apparently it is technically a foreign film.
Wait, there's been an announced Karate Kid 2?
Are they bringing back Will Luke, Smith's brat?
The Spy Next Door.
The Spy Next Door.
That's right. You gotta go down a little bit.
Bob Ho, Spy Next Door, 2010. Then he did something called Little Big Soldier. Then you had Karate Kid, Kung Fu Panda Holiday.
And it looks like he did a series of Chinese films.
Yeah, that's all
he
did.
Oh my God, he did a new Police Story film.
What's that?
That's what we were calling Super Cop.
Oh, Super Cop's the American name for it or something?
Oh, there were Police Story, and then there was one that was called Police Story Super Cop, and then there was a movie called Super Cop 2, and it was like, it's like the Rambo situation, okay?
Police Story Lockdown. Did Jackie Chan show up in the latest Expendables movie or not?
It doesn't look like he did.
Well, like, yeah, I don't see it here. I'm kind of I am and I'm not.
I want to see some of these films he's been doing recently. I've not heard of
he's
them.
He's under the radar.
Trailers for them at, like, the Multiplex.
Yeah, he's just been doing stuff at home, back in the Hong Kong.
He's been in so many movies, though.
128 yeah. acting credits.
As opposed to Chris Tucker, who has done 12 movies.
There's Jackie Chan Adventures.
Jackie Chan Adventures!
You guys love that show, don't you?
I just remember waking up on Saturday mornings to see that on Kids WB.
Yeah, or like you're homesick and it'd be on TV too. Or running on the TV in the background during the summertime.
Gotta get all those talismans.
No, those talismans, man. Although that was like season one. And then what did they do for the rest of this?
Wow. That is sort of weird. You think of all the things that Jackie Chan has done. You pull up his IMDb page and it says known for Jackie Chan Adventures, Rush Hour, Rush Hour 2, and Shanghai Nights.
Jackie Chan didn't even play Jackie Chan in Jackie Chan Adventures.
He didn't?
Nope. No. Somebody named James C. This guy. Guy from New Jersey.
Then why does it
at the end, he'd be like doing like some move and be like, oh, hey.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad.
Like before each commercial break?
Like at the end of the, at the very end of the show during like the credits.
Jackie Chan's PSAs.
Who played Uncle? This guy. Saab Shimono.
I actually thought that like the bad guys were pretty interesting in that show. Like
Jackie Chan Adventures?
Yeah, like the henchmen who would eventually like join Jackie Chan's side.
Oh, yeah, like the
one brolic dude who would like shout the name of like an animal before like each attack that he did. That big guy there.
The big guy, yeah. He was bad in the first season. Then he just joined the Jackie crew.
Jackie Squad.
Toru, was that his name?
Yeah.
I kind of like that when it's like you have characters that are at odds with each other, and then they find this common ground, and it's like, hey.
Bring them into the fold.
Yeah.
Like Vegeta.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, that's probably a big one for animation.
Oh, yeah, but he got reincarnated.
Well, Fat Boo became a good guy, but then Boo became reincarnated as Oob.
Wait, how did Fat Boo become a good guy?
Because Fat Boo is like...
Because there was Fat Boo, but then Fat Boo became Muscle Boo, Invincible Boo.
Super Boo.
Super Boo.
And then Super Boo became Kid Boo.
Kid Boo?
Fat... Yeah. Which
the continuity of Dragon Ball Z does not matter.
Hold on.
Kid Boo is the purest version of Boo. That's like pure evil.
Okay. How did he become Boo Boo? Fat Boo.
I don't remember.
And then he dies?
But Fat Boo It's a more naive version of Boo.
Yeah, he just wanted to eat.
But yeah, but he still has like the real evil Boo inside of him.
Did they split? What was the reason for Boo dying and being reincarnated as Oob?
Don't
Dragon
remember.
Ball Z continuity does not matter.
Trying to make sense of Dragon Ball Z is like...
Yeah, after the Cell saga, I was like, I don't know what's going on anymore.
Didn't matter back then. All that mattered was seeing good guys beat the crap out of bad guys.
Or good guys be beaten
and
to crap.
And there's a Super Saiyan level 2.
You mean to tell me there's a level beyond Super Saiyan?
Whoa, yeah.
As kids, our minds were blown.
Kids are dumb. We were kids. We were dumb.
Dumb. It's like, whoa, his hair got bigger. The idea that there's like a level, it's like not like a continuous, like you just get stronger and stronger and stronger. It's like you hit a plateau and you got to get to the next plateau. I would think that power
and then it,
would be
it's
more
like as
analog.
It went on, it got easier and easier for every other character.
Yeah.
To achieve that level.
We never question how those characters' kids got to those levels in like after reaching 5 years of age, whereas it took the main characters like their entire lifetimes to get to that
Dragon
level.
Dragon Ball Z continuity does not matter. All right, so there's a scene we have to talk about.
It's do we?
A slight cringe scene.
In Rush Hour?
In Rush Hour, when they're going into this, you know, Chris Tucker's characters decided he's not going to do this babysitting mission, that they're going to actually try to investigate and figure out what's going on. And they walk into this bar, nightclub, whatever. Doesn't matter what it is. There's billiards and drinking there and a guy smoking pot. And before they walk in, Chris Tucker turns to Jackie Chan's character and says, okay, just do what I do. And Chris Tucker proceeds to walk in and start using the N-word.
So
which
Jackie Chan
leads to a moment where Jackie's sitting at the bar and says the N-word to the bartender and starts a fight in the bar, which is probably my favorite fight scene in the movie.
So what did you want to talk about?
Just like... that could be controversial, but
yes,
I don't
to
think
describe
it is.
The scene.
Well, yeah, because it's initiated by Tucker, and then it's the whole... fish out of water.
Exactly. And also he's Chinese.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That's another brings me to my point is that this was like a big blockbuster starring a Chinese guy and a black guy.
Oh, you're right. You mentioned that while we were watching it and it was a success.
Yeah.
Two minority actors headlined.
In a big budget movie. Well, I don't think this was a big, but I think this was like $30 million.
For the time?
That's a good point.
It seemed like a big movie. Like, I'm watching it while I'm going like, you know, this movie doesn't seem, you know, the budget on this, like,
it's not a huge
they
budget.
Don't make movies like this anymore.
No, they don't.
But they turned out, like, what, $150, $200 million in profit on it. So it was
right.
A big draw at the box
yeah,
office.
Yeah.
So I would say it was a big movie.
And I would definitely classify it as a blockbuster. And that's interesting. I mean, there's been discussion about, you know, the whitewashing that's happening in movies right now and the reasons behind that. But it seeing this reminds you, it's like, oh my God, we've actually regressed in some ways. Except the content of the movie is very stereotypical. So
I think that's a good point. Because I think a lot of movies and media now kind of dances around racial issues. Like, fails to bring them up, just doesn't even acknowledge them. This movie just...
Tarantino.
Yeah.
Which it's like, hey!
Of course there are exceptions, but this movie, like, just didn't give a shit. Like...
Right.
Like, just threw all this stuff out there that... Like, you wouldn't see stuff like this in a movie now.
No, I mean, that might be for the best, but...
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of stuff that
at
would
the
be
time,
highly sensitive
it was
now,
just,
but...
It was just fun. It's like, no one was taking this seriously. It's like, there was no statement about this movie being a starring vehicle for minority actors. It was just a movie with two likable guys.
Well, actually, when I saw this movie today, I was, for some reason, thinking about like the political context. Because it takes place in Los Angeles, which is where the Rodney King beatings took place like 5 years before the movie was made. And Chris Tucker plays an LAPD cop, and they bring up during the movie I think Chris Tucker's character brought it up that his mom wouldn't tell anybody in the family that he was a cop. She was telling people that he was a drug dealer.
Yeah, so that's better than being a cop in L.A.
Exactly. So, like, perceptions of that within that community.
In the 90s, anyways.
Like, even though it was, a lot of this was in a comedic or humorous light, like, there's some serious issues, like, under the surface here in this movie.
They're reflecting some issues. And it's also, you know, there's this bad guy, this shadowy character called Juanito, I think. And it turns out to be a white guy. The bad guy turns out to be white.
Jin Tao or something like that.
Jin Tao, that's it.
Juanito.
Juanito?
I could not remember it. I'm sorry.
I'm on the door.
Okay, I'm not going to say another word about, like...
Juanito, El Luchador.
I miss having you on, Matt.
Oh my god.
You need to come back on LCA for an episode,
I
dude.
Definitely do.
It's 'cause those have some those devolve real fast sometimes.
I love the sidetrackings.
All right.
And we were talking about the budget and the aesthetic of this film, and like when it started, New Line Cinema, the intro, you know, when that film strip comes together, right? New Line Cinema. And I'm like, that makes sense. And Lucas wanted to know why. And it's like, well, you know, certain expectation levels are set when you see certain logos. You see a Universal logo or, you know, New Line did like B movies that had more budget than B movies, but their plot and aesthetics were a lot like exploitation movies. They were like Roger Corman movies with stars, you know, household names.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how you classify the difference in stars between someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's not a good actor, but is like a personality that everyone knows, and someone like Jack Nicholson, who's considered a great actor. It's like, I don't know how they're both stars, but there's such a difference there in quality. And it's like that. And the Arnold Schwarzenegger type movies are the kind of movies that New Line made. Of all the movies that I was into growing up, I saw the New Line logo quite a bit.
Is this movies that you rented or like saw on TV?
Movies that I rented, saw on TV. It was always that kind of like, it's like a B movie premise with a household name in it. Or I also believe they distributed like the Ninja Turtle movies. New Line Cinema is also known as the house that Freddy built, i.e. Freddy Krueger. The Nightmare on Elm Street movies were all New Line until New Line tanked.
Is that not around anymore?
Not really. It's like kind of, but not really. It's like the logo is still around, but not the production company. I think, were they picked up by Platinum Dunes or I can't remember.
Platinum Dunes? Sounds more like a record company.
Platinum Dunes. I don't know why, but that was like a production company that Michael Bay had something to do with. And they picked up like the slasher characters like Hellraiser and Freddy and Jason.
Okay.
And that's why you got Freddy versus Jason, because they were both owned by the same studio at that point. Whereas before, there were two different studios owned them, in which case you would probably never get that movie made. But when both characters were purchased by the same studio, it was like, throw them in a movie together. We don't give a fuck.
Hey, asshole.
I remember that.
Dave doesn't.
But Bubba was actually the one who told me that.
Yeah, Bubba loves that line from Freddy vs. Jason.
Hey, yeah, I think asshole. I remember it.
Up here. It's like he shows it to us. I'm just like, okay, why is this so seared in your mind right now?
It was a really funny line from that movie, though.
Was it Freddy calling Jason asshole?
Yeah. He's trying to get his attention and like get him up to like some like grain elevator. And he's like, hey, yes, asshole. Yeah.
For some reason.
There was a Japanese director on that, and it had some sort of like Japanese aesthetic. I don't know. It was at the time when like the J horror was big.
Oh yeah. Now there's a J-horror coming out, which is like from Japan. So like the original creators of,
a new Ring movie, isn't it?
Yeah, Ring versus, like, The Grudge or something like that.
Oh, yes! Oh, my God!
Really?
So, like, the two scary girls going at it.
Oh, Grudge was... The Grudge was a little boy who had a cat voice. Boy,
but then also had that, that girl that walked, like, downstairs, like, all crickety and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The little boy with the cat voice freaked me out more, honestly.
I think they were siblings or something, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a brother and a sister. So it's right there. They got the Ring girl outnumbered. It's two against one.
Yeah.
I wonder how that might have to review that, man.
Yeah. What's next on...
Right after we review the Bollywood Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What else is next on your guys' agenda?
We actually haven't discussed what we're doing next.
We might do.
And if we don't have another guest lined up, we're going to cover Alien.
I can easily we have like a list of people who are like waiting to be given a date. Like Mike Chernoff really wants to talk about Dark City.
I would love to talk about Dark City.
So I can talk to Mr. Chernoff.
But at some point we do have to get around because we covered all of the predecessors to Alien and we talked for like an entire month about Alien. So it's like, God damn it, we have to just discuss Alien.
The new one that's coming out.
Which one?
The sequel to Prometheus.
Oh, okay. I was kind of looking forward to the...
Blomkamp.
The Blomkamp one that got pushed back because of that one.
No, I actually like Prometheus.
And this is the end of our conversation. It's been good to have you on, Matt.
Dave has feelings about that movie.
I think we might have discussed this before.
Okay, so, how Star Wars fans feel about Episode 1, that's how I feel about Prometheus.
But it wasn't a real Aliens movie. It was kind of like a sidequel.
It was supposed to be it was pitched as a prequel to Alien. And there's so many Alien connections, especially like the space jockey is in it. And that's not what I envisioned. I didn't think the space jockey was engineers and.
Oh yeah.
It really interferes with a lot of the lore and a lot of the expanded universe that I'm personally aware of for Alien.
I could see that.
So it really bothered me. But beyond just bothering me on the level that the character motivations throughout that entire movie make no goddamn sense.
Well, yeah, that's pretty evident.
The movie is pretty. I'll give it that. Ridley Scott will never make a film that looks as bad as George Lucas has. Never. Sorry, Lucas.
Ridley Which Scott, one?
No matter what the quality of the movie, is going to make a damn beautiful picture. Some of them I can't sit through and stay awake, but they're gorgeous.
What I liked about Prometheus, though, was throughout the entire movie up until like all the shit hit the fan and whatever, like it had a very like kind of haunting tension to it, like if that makes any sense, like...
I felt no tension. I felt nothing but ire towards those characters.
My favorite part was when it was revealed that Chris Tucker had been in stasis the whole time and Jackie Chan, his character, thawed him out. All right, is it time to wrap this up?
Why is there terrible old man makeup on that guy? Why is there a hologram room that exists for one purpose? Why is a whole goddamn room on the ship for one purpose? Why would you need that? You don't need to have a hologram guy there. You could just have a video, and it would get the message across. And why is his makeup so bad?
They should have consulted you, Dave.
I mean, when you're doing the space stuff,
because it was written by
an alien aesthetic movie, you need to think what is practical.
Well,
it has a practical purpose, and they didn't follow that aesthetic.
Wasn't it written by one of the guys that wrote, like, Lost?
I believe so.
So it was like, he just was like, yeah, I love all this mystery, but no explanation.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
He's a bad writer.
So, should we wrap up our Chansters?
You should wrap it up, right? Or I will just continue to rant about how much I hate
Matt, thank you so ever much for being able to join us again at the Psycho Jellyfish.
It's been my pleasure.
I hope to get you back on again, you know?
I want to come back on Last Coin.
Yeah, you got to come back on Last Coin. And we got to do, like, you know, like a bonus episode of Flapdoodle Forum because I keep seeing weird shit popping up on the feed.
So we're going to have to do, like, a big episode about all the weird shit that we found out about that we haven't shared with each other over the last year.
Yeah. We'll get to it. We'll do that. We should make a plan.
I mean, the squid abortion chair. What the fuck?
What?
What was that? The whole medical chair that she uses to get the squid thing out of her body. Which...
Oh.
That was really weird.
I mean, that thing, the thing itself makes sense. Because your future technology, you'd have this thing that would just cure all wounds, whatever. But the fact that it couldn't operate, like, there, even though the person in charge on the ship's a woman, like, it's not going to work with any women.
Why wouldn't that just be flip a switch? Why wouldn't it be able to deal with both genders? Why is the high-tech medical chair only made for a man?
I don't know, Jackie Chan. Like,
why did they even add that Chris plot Tucker. Thread? It convolutes things for no frickin' reason.
Well, Jellyheads, thanks for listening to this episode.
Great.
Rush Hour was fun. Jackie Chan, great. Chris Tucker, that guy, doing his thing. We've been your hosts, Luke.
And Dave, with your special guest,
Matt Buckley.
If you enjoyed this episode, may I suggest you go to our website at psychojellyfish.com to find this and other podcasts. And you can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really does help with the show. If you're a fan, you want to help spread the madness, give us a like at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or follow us on Twitter at jellycast. Any thoughts, words, comments, or questions, send them away in the comment section. It's been a fun one, folks.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Jackie Chan!
Keep it psycho.
Give us the quote, Luke.
I don't know what to do, Matt.
Are we going to act something out?
Yeah.
You got to.
Do I need to be Carter?
The problem.
Me, you need to be Carter.
Yeah. The problem is, no matter who we take... It's going to come out racist.
Right at that moment, I realized you cannot do that voice without flailing your arms around.
Maybe we should read these quotes completely monotone.
Two officers were shot. One man lost a pinky.
But didn't nobody die?
You destroyed half a city block.
That block was already messed up.
And you lost a lot of evidence.
We still got a little bit left.
It's funnier than I expected it to be.
Yeah. I was going to have you do another take. It's up to you.
Sure. Yeah, we'll do a second take. I'll let you decide.